This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Now to a documentary about wealth and poverty in America that premieres on the PBS World Channel tonight. It's called Against All Odds. Former New York Times columnist Bob Herbert explores how racism still makes it much harder for African-American people to enter the middle class and stay in the middle class. There's a scene in the film where Mr. Herbert drives through his boyhood home of Montclair, New Jersey, reflecting on a moment in the 1960s when his dad's upholstery business is doing well. Montclair is seen as a progressive place, and some of the father's white business associates had some pretty fairly obvious advice for him.
And so they would say, Chester, you have to expand your business. And they'd say, get a bank loan. So funny, you know, get a bank loan. He needed to raise capital, so the answer was get a bank loan. Well, they couldn't get a bank loan. They weren't giving bank loans to guys who look like my father.
Bob Herbert, who's now a distinguished senior fellow at the think tank Demos, came into our New York bureau here. Mr. Herbert, welcome.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Your film looks at why black people didn't get and are still not getting a fair shot at the American dream. What are some of the systems in America driven by racism that make it so hard for African-American families to go beyond earning an income but really building wealth?
There's a couple of things that you absolutely have to have. One, everybody understands, is a good job. You have to have a decent income. Employment is obviously crucial. But most families who are solidly in the middle class began to build wealth when they purchased that first family home. And that home is essential. So the combination of a good job and that first home where you're beginning to build wealth, that's the underpinnings for a middle class standard of living. African Americans were shut out of the American dream. They were barred from most good jobs up until really the latter part of the 20th century. And they were rigidly kept out of decent housing. And we have in the film a lot of video of these tremendous riots that used to occur in Chicago. They also occurred in other places. But in Chicago, when African Americans tried to come out of the ghetto, they put together a down payment. They would try to buy a house or even rent an apartment in a better neighborhood. Sometimes thousands, 3,000 or 4,000 whites would turn out and riot outside the building to keep the individuals, the families from moving in.
And think about the access to capital when it comes to real estate. White family goes in, applies for a mortgage. There was a system set up. But often a black family can't get a standard kind of mortgage.
Exactly. The standard government guaranteed mortgages were systematically denied to blacks. And it was actually written into the government regulations because these white families, in an effort to build a middle class, their mortgages were guaranteed by the federal government. So if you somehow found a property and you had the down payment, you couldn't get a mortgage to pay off the remainder of the cost of that property. On the employment front, because it was so difficult to get jobs, most jobs for blacks were menial jobs, and almost all black women who were working up until the mid-20th century were domestics, maids or housekeepers. So government jobs became incredibly important. So you could be a teacher in black schools. You could be a sanitation worker. You could work in the post office and law enforcement and that sort of thing. And that became a stepping stone to the middle class. And, of course, there were a lot of people who were self-employed, who built businesses, which is what my family did. It's actually how my family came into the middle class.
So back to real estate. In places like Chicago, but many other places, if you had the down payment but you couldn't get a standard loan, possibly because of just race, often you bought on contract, but that's a challenge if you're building wealth, isn't it?
Contract buying. So this is not like a mortgage. Just let's say, I don't know, in those days, let's say you bought a house for $18,000 or $20,000. It was almost like buying a house on the installment plan. These shady brokers would come along and you would get to move into the house and then you would make monthly payments as if you were making a mortgage, but you wouldn't build up any equity. And if you defaulted on the loan at any point, let's say you fell a month or a month and a half behind, then they could take over the house, evict you, and not give you any of your money back. You would not have built up any equity. So it was just kind of insane. And that was pretty much a standard way of purchasing property for African Americans in those days. I grew up in Montclair, New Jersey, which is a very progressive town, and back in the 50s and 60s when I was growing up was considered a very progressive town. We could not move into many places in Montclair, New Jersey because of our race. I remember in the newspapers, in the classified ads for apartments and for houses, you would see white only, white tenancy, that sort of thing. My parents actually went through that.
And this isn't just an exercise in exploring the historical basis for what's holding back black middle-class families, even in this era. We saw it during the subprime loan crisis.
The subprime loans, which, again, exploited African-Americans, the shady brokers, they were giving subprime loans. Well, they weren't just what you would think of as shady brokers. I mean, some of them were the biggest banks that we're aware of in the country. But they would offer subprime loans to African Americans who were making, let's say, $100,000 or more a year. They were more likely to get subprime loans in some cases than white families where the income was only $30,000 a year. We point that out. We point that out in the film. So the subprime loan crisis was a variation on almost a replay of the contract selling exploitation that went on back in the 20th century.
I was surprised to learn that our social safety net, the Social Security system, actually doesn't cover – was set up to not cover certain occupations that were filled by predominantly people of color.
So when Social Security was passed under FDR back in the 1930s, he needed the support of Southern Democrats to get this through Congress, and they would not support it unless it excluded both farm workers and domestic workers. So agricultural workers and domestic workers were not covered initially by Social Security, and the reason for that is because those were the jobs that most blacks in America had, and they did not want Social Security going to African Americans.
So you could work as a maid for an entire career with the Social Security system in place for most Americans and still not be able to collect.
Absolutely. You could, we point out in the film, you could work for 40 years faithfully as a maid, do good work, finally retire, but, you know, they made so little they wouldn't have any savings, no retirement fund, and no Social Security, and in essence, no money at all.
Yet, when you look at images of black people in the media, you often see some wonderful successes. People have gone way beyond the middle class to achieve extraordinary success.
There have been tremendous successes, and one of the things I didn't want to do was to make the film like this incredible downer and suggest that no one was doing well, because that's not true. But the impression that a lot of people have is that it's either or, that it's either the people who are making astonishing amounts of money, like your big movie stars or TV stars or athletes and that sort of thing, or you're the people who are sort of stuck in the ghetto and you're living in a neighborhood that's crime-ridden, you know, and it's not just that extreme. There is a large middle class. And one of the things we try to show in the film is how, against all odds, so many African Americans were able to establish a middle-class standard of living.
So that's the film's focus, but I wanted to ask you this. There are a lot of white people in America who also feel the U.S. economy is rigged against them. Why isn't there more common ground on this point?
I think that politicians and others in this country have just exploited the racial divide in this country for, you know, what I consider to be nefarious purposes, but financially for economic reasons. And that is why the folks at the top are doing so extremely well, while the folks in the middle are still struggling and the folks at the bottom are really having a hard time altogether. For example, the latest election, Donald Trump won the presidency, but if you look at Trump's voters, so many of his voters are struggling, and they are up against the same kinds of problems economically and in some cases socially that a lot of African Americans are. So the common ground that you're talking about, people should be trying to reach that common ground, but you've got an awful lot of people hard at work to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Bob Herbert's documentary, Against All Odds, starts airing tonight on the PBS World Channel. Mr. Herbert, thank you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.